our legislative session ended just under a month ago, the regular legislative session, the fiscal session, Governor John Bel Edwards promised to veto a number of bills and delivered on that promise in vetoing those bills. Will those vetoes spark a veto override session? Joining us now to talk about that and take a look back on his experience through the session as well, State Representative Mark Wright from Covington. Representative Wright, good morning. How are you, man?
Good morning, Brian. How's it going?
Going very well. I had a, I would love to say a restful holiday, but just so much sweat. It was so hot yesterday. How about yourself?
Oh, same here, man. It takes it out of you. It's really, I mean, I like being outside, but not this time. It's just kind of hard. You know, I like throwing the baseball at my son or things like that. It's just, it drains you, you know, but that's life here, you know, and it's going to be all right. But it'll get cooler sooner or later.
Absolutely. All right, before we look ahead to the potential of a veto override session, got to look back on your work during the legislative session. You had a couple bills that were, I'm seeing one that was signed off by the governor involving higher education. Tell me all about it.
Yeah, so that bill is the state's first step towards creating a maritime academy through the UL system. Great story about that. I work in the maritime industry, and you know, it had crossed my mind a number of years ago why Louisiana doesn't have one. There's seven maritime academies, one federal and six state sort of chartered, I guess you'd say, federal maritime academies. And we have a little different environment than a lot of these academies. The state academies and the federal tend to focus on blue water shipping and things like that. And, you know, we've got a lot more of a brown water focus with the river environment and intercoastal, things like that. So long story short, I went to a meeting in Houston and listened to the chancellor from Texas A&M's Academy. And I drove home and I said, you know what, I'm going to talk to Jim Henderson, who's the president of the system, and see if I can't, like, do a resolution to ask him to study the idea of creating an academy. And so I saw him in the, you know, the lobby of the Capitol by the elevators. And he says, oh, I'm going to go one better than that. He's like, look, I'm going to come see you with my staff. He did about a week or two later. They were already steps ahead setting this up. For us to become an official maritime academy, it requires federal action as well. But they require the state to officially, you know, put this out there, which we just did. Now our federal delegation will work on it. The maritime academies are tied to the maritime administration, the federal, you know, under the Department of Transportation. So there's a lot of steps towards it, but they're going to put together a really unique program that includes some of the different institutions that we have. You know, like Nichols has marine management, maritime management. UNO's got naval engineering or architecture. You've got other, you know, universities that do things. So we'll be interested to see where this all goes, but it's the first step in, of many.
I would assume this is about piloting, navigating, that sort of thing. Because, I mean, the term maritime lends you to think, and you mentioned transportation right there. Would this cover anything outside of the driving aspect?
Oh, definitely. No, you're talking about every bit of it. I mean, there's a lot of people that go to maritime academies that never, you know, drive a ship or a tugboat or whatever the case may be. So, you know, you're talking about encompassing everything from shipbuilding all the way to, you know, terminal operations, things like that. So there's a lot to it. It's not just behind the, you know, the sticks or the wheel.
We're talking with State Representative Mark Wright. I love the Nichols and UNO ties because they're right there on the water. Nichols being on the bayou and UNO being on the lakefront. How would this play out in terms of creation of new facilities? Because there's got to be something that's river-based, right?
That's a great question. I don't know what that would look like. I was put on the advisory board that the UL system has. They've got a number of representatives from a variety of institutions, and also Representative Joe Ogeron, who's very close to the offshore community, is involved. But I can't speak to that detail yet. I think right now it's meant to be with the existing institutions and infrastructure, but certainly down the road, those types of things would be a bit, you know, open to.
We're talking with State Representative Mark Wright, a little bit about the session that was. Mark, you had a couple of bills just end up hung up in the process before time ran out. Was there anything you had proposed this year that you're like 100% set on bringing back next year to see it find the finish line?
Yeah, sure. So you may remember I did two bills related to the murders here in Covington.
Yep.
And this is a great example of, you know, you get behind the calendar in a short session and it's tough to make it up. So criminal justice had, I think, the most bills of any committee this year. And I wanted, well, the children of the victims had agreed to come and either testify or sit in the audience for my bills. And you know how it is in the legislature. Like you told the day before, you got to show up in committee. Well, I asked for a couple of weeks later so I could at least invite them or offer them the opportunity to come. And by the time I did that, you know, we were in week five, maybe six, and it just it made it too tough to get through the Senate. But I will definitely bring those two back. And honestly, look, I mean, people have said this before. It's not my, you know, my creation, but sometimes bills are better when they're 2 and 3 years of work, right? So I definitely plan to take some of the criticism that was in the bills. They both passed the House. And figure out how to make them better. And obviously, I'd be working with a new governor, assuming I come back, right? I mean, I got to get reelected too, but certainly those two I would. And there's a few others. You know, we did something related to the ports and how we fund ports. We did the tax bills are all, you know, up my alley. So I'm sure some of these I'll try again.
We're talking with State Representative Mark Wright. I mean, do you have competition? Does anybody dare run against you this fall?
Oh, my gosh. Please don't say it that way. I am not aware of anyone who has announced they're running against me. We still got 4 weeks. And, of course, you know, politics is rife with examples of people showing up at the courthouse to register or qualify the week of. So we'll see. I mean, last time there was a Democrat who ran against me, you know St. Tammany well. I mean, it's very difficult for a Democrat to win a seat like this. But I get it. You know, if you're in that party and you want to try to make a difference, you got to run people, right, regardless of what happens. So
absolutely.
We'll see where it goes. Right now, I've heard of nothing, though. So hopefully it stays that way.
Yeah, we'll keep our fingers crossed. State Representative Mark Wright, our guest. Hey, before we move on to the potential of a veto override session, and you said something very poignant in talking about your crime bills. Before we move on to the veto override session, I haven't gotten your take on how the session ended and the budget debacle.
Man, I was trying to avoid those conversations.
Yep.
I'm joking, but it did not end well. Obviously, that is not the way you want to end a session. I don't think anybody should be proud of what was done or not done. You know, one thing that's important to keep in mind for listeners is that in the back of many representative and senators' minds was that if we went to a special session, the rules change, which is essentially to pass a budget in an election year, you need 75% of each chamber, right? So 3/4 instead of 2/3 or 50, you know, 50 plus one. So I think a lot of people looked at that scenario and said, under no circumstances do we want to go there, because that basically puts the minority in full charge. You'd only need 25% to basically dictate what the budget would look like. And of course, you know, as a Republican, I see that as Democrats and the governor sort of dictating what the budget would look like. And that just was not something that many of us wanted to go to. Look, there's always been a certain amount within the Capitol. I'm not saying we should have it. It's just part of the system that we've never been able to change, which is that if you don't support, you know, like a tax increase, if you don't support, you know, busting the expenditure limit, you're not going to benefit from the money or the projects that come from that. And look, I don't like it. I, you know, but at the end of the day, when you're in my position and you see that there's about $250 million and that completes all those budget bills that would come to St. Tammany Road construction, which of course we desperately need, you know, it's I can't in good conscience say, no, I'm going to vote against it, knowing that would probably be stripped. Right. So it's a pretty heavy responsibility, and I'm not complaining. I'm just saying, like, at the end of the day, that's where my final decision lay. You know, if I didn't have anything like that, I probably would have voted against it. I like the budget bill we had from coming out of the House. I really do. And I know it's a place for compromise. I get that. You can't get everything you want. sometimes you're willing to take a stand and vote no, but at the end of the day, I like what we had originally, and I wish we could have got closer to that, but, you know, that's the way it works.
It's an interesting balance right there for those that were opposed to it to jump up and down and scream and say, we're not going to spend more, we're not going to spend more, we're not going to spend more, and then turn on a dime and say, now spend it in my district. I get it. I get the opposition to it. I also understand wanting a version that looked a lot more. Y'all did a good job on the front end. Like, on the front end, that first budget that came out and went over to the Senate, I'm hard-pressed to find anybody who is to the right side of the aisle that would have been opposed to it.
You're absolutely right. And look, a lot of credit goes to Chairman Zarang on that one, because there were a number of voices or efforts to try to deal with this budget on the right side, right? I'm talking about from a conservative perspective. He kind of came up with that on his own, not completely, but you know, he said this would kind of do it. And when it was, you know, shown to us and talked about, he was like, wow, that's beautiful. Yeah, let's go with that. That's a really good solution. But, you know, the opposition to busting the cap was not very well organized. There wasn't a lot of strategy to it. It's the last year of a term, and there's a lot of politics involved with an election coming this year. So it just made it difficult to, like, get to a place where you could win that, right? So
yeah,
that's okay. But like I said, Zarang deserves a lot of credit. I'm sure he worked with the speaker and others, you know, so it's not a solo effort, but it was really great what he did there.
Got a couple minutes left with State Representative Mark Wright. All right, let's pivot to the possibility of a veto override session. And I want to preface me asking this by saying, when you were talking about a couple of bills that didn't make it all the way, you had said that having a second or third go at a bill allows you the opportunity to make it better. That being said, and looking at the possibility or the probability of a Republican governor coming into the governor's mansion in the fourth floor next year, what is the likelihood that we see a veto override session based off of the bills that the governor has vetoed?
I think it's a high likelihood. I mean, I'm fairly confident the House will not cancel the veto session. I mean, of course, you know, like, the veto session's scheduled. It's just a question of one of the chambers canceling it. I've heard on the Senate side that it's very likely we'll go to that session. And I think if you see us go to the session, in other words, not enough people vote to cancel it, I think it's very likely we could have one, if not more, of those bills overridden. I'm not ready to bet money on that, because, you know, there's a lot that goes on. But you are talking about the end of a term, the end of a governor's term. You've got an election coming this fall. People are much more keen to what the voters are thinking, especially on these sort of emotional social issues. So I think it's a high probability we at least go, if not to see one or two overridden.
Okay, so then we would also have the opportunity or the possibility of opening up the call to so much more. I mean, it would be a lot more than just the potential of a lot more than just these three would have been deemed LGBTQ plus bills. Would the door be open to just that, or would you see everything the governor did being called into question?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you can tee up anything you want in one of these sessions. Any bill that's been vetoed, my understanding is you can tee it up. Now, the authors have to do the work, unless leadership in some way is behind overriding, you know, one or more of the vetoes. So I would anticipate that the big three that we were talking about with the, you know, the social issues will be brought up. But certainly there'll be others that people may try. I don't know about the money issues, that type of stuff. But I think once you get past some of those big ones, it does become more difficult to do that. So I wouldn't see any more, but it's possible. You know, it's always possible.
It's crazy when you think about it. And you talk about State Representative Mark Wright, our guest. Mark, you talk about how, you know, the nature of compromise is you give a little, you get a little. When the governor had three bills come across his desk, if he vetoes two of those three, but leaves the gender, what's dubbed as gender affirming care, if he leaves that one alone and lets that one pass, you veto two out of three, you're not going to get an override session. I think strategically he may have made a mistake here by vetoing all three. He has the possibility of losing all three. You do the pronouns in classrooms and teachers not talking about their sex lives in classrooms. You veto those. I don't think you have the same amount of passion as you do on this third one that Gabe Furman put forward.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, there's always one bill that sort of drives the emotion or the action behind it, and that's certainly one of them. I mean, that was voted on by a pretty high majority, right? Oh. And you've got a lot of people watching some of these changes in society and just sort of questioning where we're going. And this is an effort to sort of protect children against that. I think it's really hard to, you know, vote against that, right? I mean, if you're a legislator. Obviously, I disagree with the governor's veto, but I think you're absolutely right. I think some are more driving than others.
How do you control the narrative moving forward? Should this come to fruition, how do you control the narrative moving forward to let people know this is about children and not about the LGBTQ plus community?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, all three of the bills, you know, suffered from messaging that was sort of unfortunate. Mm-hmm. You know, things were said, you know, like the Don't Say Gay bill. That's not what that's about. But, right. You know, that's been messaged that way. That's not an easy subject. And I really do think you have to treat it with respect and not, you know, some sort of high charge in Republican rhetoric. Right. It needs to be more about governing. And so, I mean, at the end of the day, all I can do is tell you how I approach it. I remember when it was first introduced last year. I thought it was over the top. I was like, I don't know. I want to go there. But as time moved on and I started thinking about it, you know, we prevent children from buying alcohol until they're 18 and all kinds of other things. Right. So at the end of the day, when you're talking about a decision like this, that permanently changes a life, it just makes it a lot easier to say, you know what, you need to be an adult to do this. And look, I'm saying that as someone who, let me just say this. I have an in-law. He's since passed away, who was transgender. Did it before, way before it became, you know, I don't want to say popular, but before it became a thing, right?
Right.
One of my favorite in-law conversations during the holidays, it really was, has a, you know, a little bit of a tragic story, too, on that. So I know me personally, there's a respect there. You know, I don't want to, you know, you don't want it to be about specific people or specific lifestyles and things like that. But at the end of the day, you just got to tell the story in a very respectful way and where your thinking is.
Absolutely. And when it comes to the other bills, the gender affirming care one, I think, was the one that was over the top. But yeah, I don't know how we allowed, or how just as a populace, we allowed the quote unquote Don't Say Gay bill to become the Don't Say Gay bill. I mean, if right out the blocks, we call it the Who Are You Stupin bill, it has a completely different feel.
No, it's true. I mean, it is. When you ask a question about that bill, it immediately brings to mind, for, you know, kind of traditional parents, yeah, I agree with that, which is essentially like,
you leave know, your private life sexy. Private. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that should be in the family, right? I mean, I've got a number of children. Those conversations are the types of things that my wife and I should have with. Now, granted, there's some children that do not have that at home, and I think you've got to find other places for it. But to have a teacher in a 30-person classroom try to discuss this, I think raises all kinds of challenges and objections from families that want to, you know, approach it a certain way, you know, like from a Judeo-Christian perspective or whatever the case may be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, regardless of the case, it's private. In the meanwhile, we are straight up out of time for this morning. We'll continue to keep an eye on the veto override watch. He is State Representative Mark Wright. Thanks for hopping on board, man.
You got it, brother. Thank you. Take
Thank
care.
You. We'll talk to you soon.